Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where educators go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top leaders across the globe. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Danny Sunshine Bauer.
This is episode number 133 with Sarah Johnson. Hi there, my name is Danny Sunshine Bauer. I'm a former classroom teacher and school administrator turned life and leadership coach. I'm also the host of this podcast where each week I share my conversation with top leaders from across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show with Sarah Johnson, we explore a number of interesting topics like the powerful story how Sarah changed tracks from journalism to education. Sarah and her two favorite people working on a book about balance and the steps to achieve balance. What were the skills she needed to run 1,000 days in a row? And do you avoid the quiet because pain might lurk there? Thanks for spending some time with me and listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. But before we jump into the episode, I would like to take some time to thank our show sponsors. I'd like to share an incredible free resource for the better leaders that listen to this podcast. It's the top 10 fundraising ideas for 2018, and that's available at schoolzonepodcast.com. And just like the title says, you'll get the top 10 school fundraising ideas for 2018 when you download it at schoolzonepodcast.com. Well, hey there, better leaders. I am here with Sarah Johnson, who's been an educator in Northwest Wisconsin for 13 years, first as an English teacher and then as a building principal. She is entering her sixth year in school administration and is currently a high school principal in Spooner, Wisconsin. Sarah is passionate about leadership and building collective leadership in schools. She is currently writing a book with two of her favorite people in the world, the topic of which is being a balanced leader at home, work, and life to be able to stay in leadership. Sarah seeks this balance in her own life by pursuing passions such as running and writing, focusing on family with her two young daughters, and honing leadership skills to be her best version of a leader and to grow professionally. Sarah believes that leadership is a calling, and she is proud to answer every day. Sarah, thank you so much for joining me on the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Danny.
This is an absolute honor, and we have some similar connections, so it's wonderful that our paths have finally crossed on the podcast. And Sarah, let's start at the beginning. What inspired you to pursue a career in education?
It's actually kind of a funny story because, and the story has just actually resurfaced lately, but when I was my 18-year-old self, I resisted education because I believed it was not glamorous enough.
That's right.
And it was really kind of funny because in my creative writing class in high school, I wrote about it, and I was supposed to, in 10 years from that time, be living in New York by myself, alone with no kids. I mean, I even wrote vehemently that I wasn't even going to have a boyfriend. I remember the night before I left for college, my sister-in-law thought, you know, I really think you should be a school librarian. And I just remember being super offended because I was going to be a broadcast journalist. That was my goal. And then where this story has kind of evolved and rooted back, and I've been sharing it more frequently and getting back into that, was a pretty tragic event in my life that happened. It was my brother's best friend in the summer prior to my second year of college had completed a suicide, and it just literally rocked my world.
Yeah.
And I, you know, in that floundering of trying to search for self at that very pivotal time in a life, you know, 19 years old and trying to seek truth, I kind of used that experience and surfaced with the idea that I loved writing and I loved kids. And those two things came together just kind of in honor of the reflection that I found after losing him. And so I chose education after all, though the seeds were kind of always there. You know, I was a TA when I was in high school and Sunday school leader and really just have always loved that and thrived in that, but didn't have enough self-awareness. And the cool part is that, you know, I used that story and I would go back to that in my teaching years. And I really make it a point to tell his parents about that impact. And then more recently I've been writing. So, you know, just posted up a blog about how this is a very important reason that I got into education, because I've been feeling that calling again pretty deeply. And my brother actually also completed his own suicide my first year in the current position that I'm in. Yeah. And I'm just right now coming into this season of restoration and kind of coming out of that. And knowing that my message is supposed to be multiplying right now. So it's a really cool story. You know, it's what it really is, what got me in. And in the position that I'm in, working with teenagers every day, I know that I know that I'm here for a reason, and I'm ready to show up every day. And I feel that truly to be an honor.
Yeah. I'm so sorry to hear about those tragedies. So thank you, you know, for being authentic and showing up on the podcast and sharing that, because it's a part of your story now. Mm-hmm. And but those tragic events, you know, pushed you, I guess, into a beautiful place of where you can really serve communities and help kids. And I'm sure, like, it's all about creating these loving environments and being able to hear where kids are really at, right? And help them navigate the complexities of life.
You have absolutely got that. And, you know, the best part is I've come to a place where I can use it and show up bravely. And, you know, so, you know, I have received the training to make myself the best that I can be to respond when I have students in crisis. Mm. And so it's just really been pretty special to be in that place.
Right. Yeah. I feel like I'm talking to Brené Brown right now when you're talking about showing up bravely and that kind of stuff. This is, you know, that's good.
It's funny that you mention her, because she's obviously, I have a lot of respect for her and have read a lot, and her work has really kind of brought me through some of those struggles to use it, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What did that training look like? Was that something offered by schools? Was that something that you personally invested in, or how does that work?
Right. So there are a couple of different avenues. One is QPR training, which is question, predict, and refer. And this actually occurred in a position prior to my brother, but it was an effort between the county in the district that I was working in at the time in our school. And so that's just basically just being able to see the signs and being brave enough to ask the questions about their current mental state, and then predict how it's going to move forward, and then refer them to the person who can appropriately respond to that, whether that is, you know, the crisis line or law enforcement, depending upon the situation that you're in. And then the other one that I chose to engage in that our administrative association brought to a conference was the Youth Mental Health First Aid. And I'm really excited because I just got the clearance finally, I say finally, to get my staff trained on that. So we're going to be doing that within the coming months. And that's basically, you know, really important for teachers and staff that are working with teenagers to be able to identify, first of all, that 1 in 5 teenagers are faced with a mental health challenge. And so, you know, kind of being aware of what those could be, and then also just being aware of your language and the way you move through that space with teenagers that are struggling. It doesn't have to be straight up suicide prevention. It's kind of all of the other characteristics that go along with mental health challenges. And one of the things that you'll notice that I've had to train myself to say is, you know, I say they completed a suicide because other language is pretty stigmatizing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm just thankful for that training. It's all been free, and I'm excited to bring it to my staff because it's about time. You know, in my community, we've actually, I didn't realize this was ever going to be a focus, by the way, because it's been, right, you know, right. Instructional leadership. But when I've come into this season of my life, realizing that I have to start using these things because it's what brought me here. And I believe it's kind of, you know, what's kept me here, and particularly in the district right now, because I can just feel it almost on the daily. But we have had past graduates pretty much every year that I've been there complete suicides. And it's just made me really question and wonder, you know, what can we do to be a part of the solution to that? So there we are. That's going to be a focus here coming up.
And I was on Google as you were sharing that, and I see the QPR Institute. Is that where folks should go if they are interested and want to receive that training?
Yeah, I think that's one way. And I am not as good at multitasking as you are, but I could share my blog. I did link it up. But yeah, it would be the QPR Institute. And then I believe the Youth Mental Health First Aid comes through the I don't know if it's NAMI or which association, but they're tied to the suicide prevention camp.
Okay. Yeah, well, maybe after the recording, if you can send me a link to that specific blog post, we'll put that in the show notes for the listeners.
I would love to do that.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I'd love to feature it.
School leadership is hard work. Why should funding student-centered programs be difficult too? If you're stressed about your budget and where you'll find some extra cash to run a great program for kids, I have a solution for you. Introducing the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas for 2018. In this guide, you will find the best school fundraising ideas available in 2018. My favorite company described in the guide is School Spirit Vending. School Spirit Vending brings hassle-free fundraising to schools through custom sticker vending machines installed in your school. The best part, you do absolutely no work. The School Spirit Vending team installs, maintains, and shares the revenue collected with the school. You can learn more about School Spirit Vending and the other magnificent companies mentioned in the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas for 2018 at schoolzonepodcast.com. Go there now, download the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas for 2018 at schoolzonepodcast.com.
So I know you, speaking about love, you love balance, and there's two people that you said you love, two favorite people in the world that you're riding with. So, you know, this is releasing in February, and maybe there's some momentum for the book then, but can you unpack a little bit about balance and who you're working with and what started it all there?
Yes, for sure. So I am very proud to be working with Dave Burgess Publishing. And I'm working with Jessica Johnson, who is an elementary principal here in Wisconsin, and Jessica Cabine, who is the principal at a kindergarten center in Austin. I know that you are connected with Jessica Cabine. And I think I know that we all became connected through this idea of needing to seek balance. And, you know, Jessica Johnson and I got connected first over Twitter, which is a space that I know that I have had to go to find some balance, to seek some sanity in this position as a principal that can feel so isolating. And I feel like I just really got lucky because we were very unbalanced at the time, just kind of working in small schools, taking on a variety of roles. And one of them was a district assessment coordinator. So even though she's an elementary principal and I'm a high school principal, we also wore the extra hat of coordinating all the state assessments for the district. So we kind of came together in a humorous way. It was fun. It was on a Twitter chat that we just started, hashtag Wisconsin DAC jokes, and just being silly about where that was. I'm pretty sure she started the hashtag. And honestly, then the relationships kind of evolved from then. Jessica Johnson is the ultimate connector, and she somehow got Cabine and I connected, and somehow we got lucky enough to get into this little trio chat that we have found, and it's a space we go to where we keep one another sane and happy and joyful and balanced, truly. So we're all moms of young children and just working to find what we call that, not a 50-50 balance between work and life, but finding the balance between our positions, our profession, our life, and our passions. So I really have always wanted that, because when I became a principal, I was actually an elementary principal. And I had a one-year-old and a three-year-old. And I didn't know what balance was in those times.
No.
So it just kind of came out of a need to seek it intentionally. Otherwise, it was going to eat us alive, I think.
Is that a thing that you subscribe to, the idea of, like, I guess, seasons, you know, that I guess when you have a one and a three-year-old, maybe you're not going to be as balanced at that time? Or is it achievable even in that extremely busy season?
Well, I subscribe to the fact that we're in seasons, and I do believe it's achievable, but it's got to be in increments. And I think that depending upon the season in which you live, that you have to be satisfied with what you can get. You know, I think that in that phase, when I had a one and a three-year-old and trying to lead a building, I didn't know who Sarah was anymore. It was only, you know, so focused on mom and principal in those roles. So I had to find Sarah again. And actually, that's where I found my running. And I think we're kind of jumping into the different questions, the answers that I kind of had thought. But one thing that I looked at today, and I'm on a running streak of, I think my days were 1,171 days today. Whoa. And I've been on a running streak.
That's crazy. Congratulations.
Well, thanks. But you know, it actually started on July 11th, 2014. And that was the day that I clicked submit to my current position.
Okay.
And it was like a, I'm not going to say a rock bottom moment because that's not what it was, but what it was an intentional decision because I knew I was completely out of balance. I was traveling 40 minutes one way every day from my job. Mm-hmm. And there was a position that was open 6 miles away. And I really did not want to leave my learning community because one thing that I've learned about myself is that I cherish the relationships and I care very deeply about the people with whom I work. So it was really hard. It was really painful to leave, but I knew that if I didn't try to find some margin that I'd be in trouble. So yeah. I applied for a position and started my running streak on the same day. And it's just been the way that I found Sarah again. Mm-hmm. And it's been very important. And I don't think I'll ever, I mean, I can't imagine letting it go. I've struggled with that over the last 3 years plus of running every day about when I could let the streak go, but it's something that just totally keeps me balanced.
So you see that value in participating in running and the balance that it affords you. But I'm curious too, like, what is it about Sarah that allows you to be consistent every day? Because a thousand, you know, that's different than 30, you know, it's different than 60. Like that's 1,000. It's a lot. So what is it about you that, you know, allows you to be that consistent?
That's a really good question and would require a deep level of self-understanding. And I think I kind of achieved that because I think I am highly reflective. And I think that I've learned that one of my strengths is being in tune with myself over the last 3 years. So to be able to self-regulate. And I think I would say probably, you know, when you get to 500, at some point you had to make a choice to get out there every day. And mm-hmm. I don't know, I couldn't tell you when that changed for me, but now it would have to be to force myself not to do it mm-hmm. because it's become such a part. And honestly, over the time it's been, you know, finding a connection with nature, cause I don't do a treadmill. I can't do the treadmill.
Never even heard it called that.
Oh man. Yeah. No, I've tried it a few times. You know, I live in Northwestern Wisconsin. So, I mean, there are days where it's negative 30 to 40 degrees below wind chill and I'm out there, I've got my face mask, I'm frozen. And it's probably then only going to be a mile, but it's going to be a space where I get to win a battle in that day. And I feel strongest when mm-hmm. I can come back from that, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think it's more so just seeking that and being intentional and needing Sarah and not, you know, cause mommy right. is prominent and I love her. And the children are so important to me, but I can't be her unless I get to first be me. If that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. It's just, you know, there's so much to talk about there and I don't want listeners to get lost that we're, you know, now talking about running because this right. is absolutely applicable to what we do every single day within schools and what we do yeah. for ourselves at home. And then what we do as, you know, moms and dads and the different type of roles that we hold. I'm curious too. So when I'm asking this question because it's something I guess I would say to the listeners and I'm working on a book as well. It's February. So I have no idea if it's out by now or not. Like I'm not with any quote publishing companies or anything like that. I'll probably most likely self-publish. In fact, I'm giving it away for free. And then there'll be an audio companion that if people want to invest in that, they can because, you know, folks know me as a podcaster. But the text version will be on Kindle, all that will be for free. But the way I wrote my first draft was two topics a day. And it reminds me of Jim Collins, like 20 Mile March. So it wasn't, you know, if I was feeling really good, I didn't write 5. And if I felt like crap, I didn't write less than 2. You know, it was just 2 a day. And that's how I got through 100 topics and was able to finish within 12 weeks. So I'm curious if there's something similar for you as you approach your running. Because, you know, do you get credit if you go run a half a mile or mile as opposed to 6 miles? You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, eating the elephant, right? No, that has just been an evolution that's really kind of beautiful. But because at the beginning, it was like for speed maybe. And now I mean, my journey has, I've run two marathons and I can't believe it because I never would have thought that. So I give myself credit for a mile for sure. And I think those listening, if you, this inspires you in whatever way, 1 mile is a mile and it's still that space for myself, whether it's going to be 10 minutes where I'm out there or whether it's 4 hours, you know, it really doesn't matter. But one thing that I have done, and I credit Jessica Johnson with this, though she doesn't want to take it, is I never thought about setting a monthly total. Hmm. And I'm now, I mean, I'm not tallying it up, but I'm almost, I don't know, like I've missed the 2-year marker. I passed the 2-year marker of just making sure that I get at least 100 miles in a month. Mm-hmm. And then okay. That way I know that it's a balance there too of being out there and growing too, because that's the other thing. I'm internally competitive. I'm not competitive with other people at all. Okay. In my running, especially, I always want to do better than I did before. And that's kind of a life mantra, I suppose. So I guess that has kept me going too, whether it's a speed, you know, record or just keeping that 100 miles or doing better that way, every time. So
I love how this podcast has evolved because I always have questions prepared, you know, but yes. Then I just like start talking to people and just see where it goes. And I think I know it's incredibly valuable for the listener because it's getting downloaded like crazy. So and that keeps increasing. But yeah, this is awesome. I love talking with you right now, Sarah. The one other question that's kind of what we've been discussing, this idea of balance. So the listeners want to achieve it. What would you say to them? Like, what are some steps that, you know, they can take today that are actionable to start getting balance back in their life?
Yeah, well, I think, and in fact, I know the first step is just self-awareness. Is just taking stock and sitting in a quiet, and that we don't want to sit in quiet. I just was listening to, so I listen to your podcast a lot. You're really easy to talk to. You're very easy to listen to. And yay. I always pull something away. It's truth. But then I also was just listening to Jen Hatmaker. She had a guest on, and truly we avoid quiet because it's where the pain might lie. And so I would just say that just to take stock, you know, where are you at and what are your signs? Like when I'm out of balance, I'm not eating, like I'm eating air all day and mm-hmm. I'm feeling exhausted by the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And so that's just one quick sign to me to say, okay, what's going on? You know, am I overloading on the work and the position? Am I stressed about the work that's piling up because I'm just having fun with my kids only? You know, are bills not getting paid because I'm forgetting to do those because I'm so focused on the tasks? You know, what is it? And to actually make intentional efforts to incrementally add the balance back, you know, so if it's the running, it's or whatever that physical exercise is, if that's what you're going to do, or if it's that you subscribe to that miracle morning, like you mm-hmm. haven't been reading, you haven't been growing professionally. So you're just going to, you know, read a chapter in the mornings before you get off to work, whatever that happens to be. Because those are a lot of different areas and we look at it, we, as in Jessica Johnson, Cabin and I have been looking at it kind of a quadrant. And I would just say, just to take some time to reflect and look at your current reality, and realize that you should have passions that you're seeking in addition to your professional, growth and your position and your home life. You know, they should all have some play every day. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what I would say is just to take stock first.
Ah, very good. So the pain might lurk there, listeners, mm-hmm. but taking that stock of where you're at and giving yourself the time to be quiet and reflect, it's worth it. You get through that mm-hmm. pain, it's going to add so much more value to your life, but you can't get there without giving yourself permission to have that time. You know, we talk when I do my productivity course about being intentional with like white space, or even like you talked about the miracle morning, like actually putting that into your calendar so that it gets done. And, you know, I help small business owners too. And I was talking to one recently, he does real estate and he takes apartment buildings and flips them from dirt to diamonds is sort of like his vision. He was loving on me. So, you know, when people are giving you like compliments, you're like, yeah, tell me more. But the neat thing is sometimes you don't know the things that you're exceptional at. And so it was interesting to hear what he valued about like content I put out or how I've coached him and that kind of thing. And the one hack that I can tell all the listeners is just putting it on the calendar. And one thing mm-hmm. he wanted to do was just write thank you cards as a business owner to clients and leads and prospects, and he never found time for it. But that's because he valued it in his head, but he never wrote it down. And so it never got done. And I didn't realize that that's like kind of a superpower for some people. And it works for me, but it was cool to hear that. And I'm hearing about so many of your superpowers now too. So I love this quote by Derek Sivers: "What's ordinary to you is extraordinary to me." Sarah, what would you consider your superpower?
I wasn't expecting that one. Sorry. No, that's okay, because I suppose kind of, again, I'll go back to Kabine. You know, she says that I can make feces into diamonds. So she's the ultimate reframer. But I think that's, that is mine too, because I tend to just see the positive, you know, just to see it. And I'm working that might, I think that is a superpower. I never realized it was.
Totally.
You know, that just automatically seeing the good and like seeing the miracle in the mundane, you know, that a sunrise does speak to me and it doesn't speak to everybody else. I guess I didn't realize that. Mm. So I think that is kind of a superpower, because it gets you to thrive every day. Mm-hmm. And that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Being able to reframe. And for the listeners, check out Josh Spodek. He's been on the show. Don't remember the episode, but just search Spodek on my website and you'll get his episode. He wrote a book, Leadership Step by Step, that we're currently reading in the mastermind. And that will teach you what he calls the method. And that helps you learn how to reframe, because I'm kind of evolving from a pessimist to an optimist. but in the most taxing, you know, and stressful environments, like moving to Belgium and trying to figure out like, why is it like operate this way? Sometimes I can be a little bit negative about it and kind of have a meltdown.
Sure.
But Josh's work and his framework, the model and the method, has helped me stay more positive than not. So you can absolutely reframe, you know, your mindset. That's my long way of asking you, Sarah. Is there a reason why you have this positive outlook? Have you ever thought about that?
Yeah, I spent actually a lot of time wondering about that. And it kind of leads to, yeah. So, you know, people often ask, and I know one of the questions you often ask is, when you think of a leader, who do you think of?
Yeah.
And it's so easy to say that the answer to that one is my dad. And I really think that I have just been blessed to have that role model in my life, because he lived that out every day, you know, truly, and still does, I should say that. You know, so why do I look at life that way? You know, I was able to witness pretty much a leader who, let's see, he worked a taxing physical job. So mm-hmm. he was a carpet installer mm-hmm. and an entrepreneur. So he created his own business, right? So he'd be working these terribly long hours. I don't even know if I can't frame that 14-hour days, but he always had the balance at home. He never needed a title. He was just a leader. And so I was just able to witness him serving in home, in public, and in work. And he basically showed me on the daily that leaders care deeply and they serve with their heart, that they pour themselves out. They don't hoard their spirit for themselves and they listen. And honestly, that they see the version of people in front of them that shines the brightest, whether that's an ember or a beacon. You know, they're not afraid to show they care, but to be strong in the face of adversity. And the biggest thing is that they're not self-absorbed or dwell in negative in hard times, that they frame mm-hmm. words of hope and gratitude. Mm-hmm. And so I got to watch my dad really never, you know, that the concept that comparison is the thief of joy.
Yeah.
I never heard him say, "Oh, so-and-so has this, but we don't." You know, literally his mantra was, I was the youngest of seven kids and I started working when I was 14 so that I could have the joys of, you know, whatever teenagers wanted.
Sure. Yeah.
And, you know, he always said, we're not rich, but we're rich in love. And so it was just always that idea that to, you know, I was just grew up with this mentality that I was so thankful for whatever it is I had, because my dad walked that every day. And so I really do give a lot of credit to him for that.
Yeah, he sounds amazing. So
he is pretty amazing.
I can see how, you know, he taught that to you. This podcast is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators and podcasts by educators. Listen to all the great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. That's edupodcastnetwork.com. So from superpowers, let's move from superpowers to mistakes. And what do you consider your worst leadership mistake, and what did you learn from it?
Well, you know, I think my worst leadership mistake, and that's a vulnerable question, because honestly, I think we make 1,000 decisions as leaders every day. So, you know, we could easily make several of them. But part of it is two of them. One of it was going into the principalship kind of with this idea, and I would say almost naive idea, that every school culture was like the one I came from. You know, I came from a situation where I was a teacher leader, and we were in a tiny school where there are 300 kids K-12. So as a high school teacher, there were 100 students in, you know, in that section of the building, and it was all hands on deck because it had to be. And so, I just kind of assumed that everyone had the culture of shared in distributed leadership. And, when those structures aren't in place or that culture isn't in place, there, you have to build that. You can't just walk into that and expect it to be there. So when I look at that, I think, you know, just not making assumptions from the get-go that, that healthy, thriving culture that I thrived in was there. But that also, you know, I would say that this kind of ties to the advice for any new person going into a principal position is that, you know, forgetting that it is the daily interactions with people that make the biggest impact over time. You know, central office is going to steal your time if you allow it. Disciplinary issues are going to take up your time if you allow it. And the trust in your building will crumble if you don't spend intentional time on your people. So that was, you know, just kind of coming in brand new. Some of that was in my control and some was out, but just, you know, kind of forgetting that I needed to build that and not just assume that people can watch me and see that who I am and trust me automatically.
Yeah.
You know,
because you're a good person, right? That's what I thought. Like, yeah, why don't people necessarily trust me right away? I'm a good guy. Like, I know I am, but yeah.
Right. Don't they know? Don't they know? They don't. You have to show it. And that's, you know, that's hard when you're coming into a new space every time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wish I would have learned that earlier in my career. That would have helped out a lot.
Yeah. Yes.
So, you know, I so appreciate your heart and your stance towards balance. And we talked about that a bit at home and what you need to do for Sarah personally. But then at work, how do you approach what the priorities need to be for the day? And do you have any routines or systems that help you out there?
Yeah. So, you know, I have, I'm just going to be very open and frank about this because I have had systems in place that are awesome and then they can get sliced open on any given day. Mm-hmm. But I know for me, just making sure that I start with the best laid plans, which is to fill my calendar with those priorities. So you mentioned, you know, your impact on having a person put on their calendar what it is they need to get done.
Yeah.
And so I work with my administrative assistant to know when the door needs to be closed to my office and that when I need to be left alone to be out in classrooms. And also the priority is always with people during the school day. You know, sometimes that means on the phone, in person, or out in classrooms, but it's always with people and a mix of paperwork. Because I know that I can't be a mom at home checking email or completing paperwork all night either. And generally the days go well when I have the calendar set ahead. And if there's a bunch of blank space, I know I'm in trouble because everyone will take the time and nothing will be a priority. Mm-hmm. So I make sure that that calendar is filled with what it is that needs to be done.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And you know, if you the open calendar or an open email inbox, you're just letting other people's priorities dictate what you do for the day.
Oh, that email. Yeah, for sure.
Oh, that email.
That's a beast.
What are you particularly proud of your school for accomplishing or attempting recently?
So recently I can speak. I have been working really hard and we have been working hard to build a culture in my building of distributed leadership. And I've been working with the leadership team for a couple of years and we just literally within the last week hit this aha moment and the trust is finally there. And we have come together in a space where I left the room, they set some, and it was actually not intentional, but they set some norms and they actually titled me Sarah, the Collaborator Johnson. And my heart soared when I came back and I saw that paper, like, nice. Wait a second, they know me. This is good. But what I'm super proud of is that we have, I could just say that I think we have an engagement issue for on a few different levels. And so what I'm excited about is at the high school level, we have this section of time called, it used to be advisory period. Now we call it Rails time. We've got a flexible scheduling system where it's been evolving, where we have students choosing where they get to go. So really it's an awesome opportunity to get some structured interventions in there, mm-hmm. and, but then also offer some enrichment. But we haven't had our arms wrapped tightly around it enough yet. And so what I'm really excited about is just this week, they're going to be rolling out a supported Rails time, and the staff has completely owned this. They have taken it on. They've brought others in. And so students who are receiving a failing grade are going to be, you know, pulled in by these caring adults who volunteered and want to be a part of it and are going to be working, you know, on time management. If that's the issue, is it study skill issue? You know, it's just getting deeper with some of these students.
Yeah.
And I'm just really excited about the fact that we have staff that are not having to be asked to do something, but that they are literally jumping and get their hands dirty. And that is just, to me, I'm so proud of that. And just that finally, I say finally, cause I'm going into my fourth year, mm-hmm. but just, I've been wanting to pass that torch and wondering why my staff hasn't taken it, but I understand there's a bigger issue to that with culture mm-hmm, and climate. Mm-hmm. So I'm super excited that they're in a space now where they're excited to take things on and plan them, and they don't need me at the table to do that. So they're empowered, and that's exciting.
Yeah. What you just said there, they don't need me at the table to plan that. It's so huge because you're transferring that power, but you're also transferring the ownership, right, to the people. And what I love about that, it reminds me of just being able to empower those closest to the problem, quote unquote, you know, to come up with the solutions, because we're a few layers removed as school leaders. And if you're like me, you probably think that your ideas are best, right? You have the solution, but sure. I don't see it day to day, right? And things change. And so you need to give the teachers that type of power, because they're going to come up when they are invested, they're going to come up with the best solutions for the kids, I think.
Yeah.
Can you unpack? So I bet the listeners understand intervention, helping kids that are struggling in classes get caught up. But what does enrichment look? Because, you know, you talked about choosing where kids can go. And we did something called Seminar Day at Brooks College Prep. So I understand what you do. But for those that don't, this is a really cool thing that schools could be doing. And so what does that look like mm-hmm. for you?
Well, first of all, we're not at the vision of where, you know, I personally want to see it. But, you know, when I got there, we had this advisory period where, as you can understand, and a lot of people understand, it's traditional, where there's 25 kids assigned to the same teacher and it's all study hall for everybody. Well, not everybody needs study hall. And in fact, students need more. So right now, the enrichments that we have really are for the students who are getting, you know, they're getting the grind done, they're getting the work done. They are getting the grades, whatever that happens to be, and their test scores are fine. So they just have opportunities. You know, one of them is that our FIED teacher is offering some specific activities that would be, whether it's weightlifting or, you know, games or things like that for the kids that really just want that physical activity at the end of the day. But then we also have a Rube Goldberg team. So they're working on, that's a science and a physics thing. So we have a teacher who's willing to do that and interested in doing that. And then they create their own, you know, machine, and then they go off in the spring and they'll compete with that. You know, what I really want to see visionary is, you know, I love these genius hour ideas and bringing that to the high school level. We haven't gotten there yet. But then also the idea of simply book studies. Last year we had a men's choir. We didn't have a men's choir in our school. So okay. Those students were able to just volunteer their time and go in, and then they ended up going to clinics and performing and just anything that, you know, that the right now that the teachers have that they can offer and want to offer, you know, and having that option so that it's something extra that the kids are just on fire and have a passion for. I have a kid who came in the other day who just desperately wants feedback on their poetry.
Yeah. So,
and we have a great teacher who has actually organized poetry slams in our small town. We have a coffee shop, and she's organized our own poetry slams here in town where the kids are performing. And so this student is like, you know, can we just get together and write poetry and slam it with one another? And I'm like, yeah, yes, you can. Let's do that during our Rails time. So it's enrichment. So nothing super focused yet, but having the vision to get there.
That's fantastic. Love it. What's a class we should add to our schools that's not currently taught that you know of?
So I actually just listened to one of your casts that I think it was episode 108 with Lance, and he actually had the same answer, but I'm not going to change my answer. I literally have it, you know, adulting, you know, how to get through life.
Yes, sir.
And I really think it's important because, you know, that's a space where we already do that in our consumer economics classes, you know, our financial classes, so that they can learn how to budget. But it's how do you handle the triumphs and the trials of life? And I don't know that that's in the scope of public education, but I sure think, you know, in our society, we're always pushed to kind of the next thing, you know, whatever that happens, that path is, and then when are you going to get married when you're in a serious relationship? When are you going to have kids, you know, when you're in a marriage? But then how do we never really teach teenagers how to cope with the reality of life, you know, what happens when tragedy strikes? And how do you pay the bills and maintain, you know, composure? So I don't really know what the alignment and the outcomes would be, but I just think it'd be important to teach them how to adult.
I think that's good. I mean, so much of it, sometimes the school thinks the home should teach, the home thinks the school, and then everybody just kind of forgets about it. Yes. And then we have these, I guess, forming mini adults that are just out there figuring it out for themselves, right? And if you ever look at a current kid, and you're just like, why are they so weird? You know, but what are you doing to teach them how to be an adult? You know, take up some of that responsibility and pour into a young person's life.
Yes. Which is hopefully what we do every day.
Absolutely. Right? That's what we hope. Yes. Yes. Sarah, what's one book every principal should read right now and why?
I'm going to shout out to a couple of my local people, because I just feel like they're doing such a bang up job. So The Coach Approach, Jessica Johnson co-wrote it with a couple other coaches, but she's a principal who's leading with a coach's hat. So I think that's really good, because there's a lot of really actionable feedback steps that you can do as a principal, but also as a person who grows your people. I really love that. And then Hacking Leadership by Joe Sanfilippo and Tony Sinanis, I thought was just a really practical read and just a great framing reminder of the simple things that we can do, you know, to be strong leaders and to build into our people and to create a mission and a focus, but also to never forget, you know, it's students first, but it's adults always too. So, you know, just thinking about how you can practically step into that. And I just kind of go back to it and read it chapter by chapter, some good reminders of what I need to do to hack my leadership. So I'd give those two.
All right. And listeners, you know, by now, I hope that these books will be linked up along with all the great resources in the show notes. So you can grab The Coach Approach and Hacking Leadership just by clicking the podcast art, and the show notes will pop up for you. Sarah, besides running, do you do anything else for fun?
Well, right now, anything I can do with my kids is fun. And, you know, we do a lot of dance parties and singing. That's just me. We go to shows. So just last night came off of seeing Aladdin in the Twin Cities in Minnesota. So I run, I read, you know, basically I'm in a phase where fun for me is tied for my children, and that's filling and satisfying. And I'm lucky enough because I do have a childlike spirit, love to laugh and sing and just, you know, do the fun things that remind us that life is short and it doesn't have to be too complicated.
Yeah. I've just started doing these Facebook Lives where I try to, I guess, inspire and encourage people that watch, but I do a lot of impromptu dancing and singing at home as well. And I've often thought about just turning the lights on, right? going live with just an incredible dance explosion, if you will. So I may or may not, I don't know. You know, sometimes I worry how people will view it. But then again, I guess if people don't like it, that's not people I want to either work with or listen to the show anyways.
Well, I'll tell you, you have one lady in Northwestern Wisconsin that will just light up with that. So go for it.
Well, there's also an investment I can make called Crowdcast, and you can bring people on a live Facebook feed. So you could have a guest co-dancer. So we'll see. Maybe we'll set that up.
That'd be awesome.
If you could be automatically good at something, what would it be?
Utter truth is playing the piano or the guitar, because that way I could sing my heart out with a bass of beautiful music behind me instead of always going a cappella, because I do that a lot. Mm-hmm. And I tried to pick up the guitar. I bought one a couple of years ago, and I can play my favorite song by heart, which is You Are My Sunshine. But I'd love to be able to just shred that thing and sing at the same time. That'd be awesome.
It would be. And what message would you put on all school marquees across the globe for a single day if you could?
Oh, belonging is more important than fitting in, and we all belong here. So love I think it's important for people to have a space to belong.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've made it, Sarah. You are a fantastic guest. You know this question from listening to the show. You're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by budget or resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school, and what would be your top three priorities?
Well, honestly, I would build it. And I've thought about this in terms of who I would have alongside me. And I've made the decision that I would have Dave Burgess to help me for passionate engagement for my teachers, and Peter DeWitt for powerful collaboration and building a climate for all of our learners. And then I'd have Jen Hatmaker to be there at my side as my best friend and balancing confidant, because together we could build a school that would focus on engagement, collaboration, humor, and we would have all kinds of staff and students just engaged and loving it, and would be loads of fun. Those would be my advisors to help me, and I would pay them a lot because money wouldn't be an issue.
Well, Sarah, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
I just say, you know, my only advice is kind of going back to our themes to keep tabs on the self that's the core of you, regardless of your title. And by that, I mean, you know, principal, teacher, for me, wife, mother, sister, because you were born first before any labels were placed upon you. And it's too easy to fall into a pit of any title and lose sight of yourself. So keep your passions alive, use them to augment your leadership. And for me, that's singing, it's writing. And I love to do both in every role that I carry. So I'd hope that you can find that self and maintain that self through everything. And you can find me, I love to Vox. Absolutely love Voxer chats and connecting on that level with people. Hearing somebody's voice is very different than, you know, tweeting and texting. So Principal S.A. Johnson is my Voxer handle. And I do also love Twitter, very connected there. So you can find me at Sarah S.A. Johnson on Twitter.
Well, Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life's 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Sarah. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com. Type Sarah in the search bar and the show notes page will pop up. You'll get highlights of today's episode and links to all the resources and the best way to connect. Sarah, thanks again for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thank you, Danny. I really appreciate the opportunity to chat with you.
Better Leaders, just a few more things before you take off. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show. This helps gives the show some social proof, aka iTunes juice, and encourages new people to listen to the show. If you are a social media junkie, share your biggest takeaway from the show, and feel free to tag me on Twitter or Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer. Take the letters, switch them around, and create something interesting and new. That's how I got it. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Do you want to get a short email from me every Sunday where I share the best resources I have come across, links to interesting articles, books, blogs, and podcasts that have challenged my thinking, and a quote that's inspired me and will inspire you as well? If you'd like access to this resource, head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and join the newsletter at the top of the page. Over 1,000 school leaders subscribe, and I think you'll benefit from it too. In the newsletter, I also share when a new blog or podcast comes out, as well as different opportunities to work with me. Thanks again for listening to the show.